From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the Hip and this is a Lip.
Hello, everybody in Hip and Lip Nation. Yes, good evening or good afternoon or good morning, whenever you might be listening to us. How are you out there? It is a fine Tuesday evening as the Islanders are playing the Connor McDavids in Western Canada as we speak. Yes, indeed. Very exciting stuff going on. We got quite a bit to get to this evening. Isn't that right, Mr. Hip? Indeed.
Oh, of course, always. Oh, we are Hip in the Lip, a New York sports podcast. This is episode number 50. Yes, I don't know what we're doing with our lives, but with this, but we are halfway to the century mark.
50 episodes. You know, unbelievable.
It's just a round number. It really has no other significance other than it's a round number. People like to point out milestones for round numbers. Oh, anniversaries. Oh no. We just keep going on. And the Lip is going to be especially challenged tonight because he is multitasking with the Islander game on to his left as we do the podcast. Oh my gosh,
there it is.
The humanity. Oh, and I almost score. And I know that nobody listening is going to actually like probably be watching the game or check. So this is their version of the play-by-play that they otherwise would not have thought.
Try and do play-by-play. I think we'll get censored since Francesa has talked about on the radio numerous times that we can't do the play-by-play. Otherwise, they call and yell at him. Oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's against the rules, against the law. I'm sorry. But like maybe try out if anybody was listening right now and said, oh, he's pretty good at that hockey play-by-play. Maybe we should give him a crack at calling the ECHL Austin Warriors. Oh.
Well, since you like to mimic everything that Mike Francesa does, then I guess you have to follow the principles that he establishes based on not just whatever he feels like. So that being said, like us on iTunes. We'll get to it. So we got some basketball to discuss. Maybe not the basketball you think I would normally be referring to. We'll get to a little bit of NFL talk as free agency is upon us. And of course, we'll get to some Islanders. And there's a hipster moment of Zenith, which the Lip has gracefully taken over. And of course, the hipster beer of the
week.
Everything
done with grace. Everything.
So I think to the
contrary would be erroneous. I'm sorry.
I'm just dropping the big ones on us. Erroneous. Oh, I don't know. Better get my thesaurus.
Erroneous. Well, people did that actually for recuse. I don't know if you saw that story when our attorney general recused himself from the Russia investigation. I guess everybody in the country was saying to themselves, oh my God, what does recuse mean? Dictionary.com, please let me know.
So that was actually a thing. Dictionary.com gets a spike in traffic. What do you know? As we would all anticipate. So
yes, I think everything has spiked in the Trump White House, but anyway.
I don't know how much coverage this is actually getting in the New York market right now, but I think it's the biggest story in the New York market right now, and that is that there's going to be about, I don't know, 15 college basketball games played in the New York City boroughs over the next 4 days.
Who knew?
Or something like that.
I must have been under a rock. I have no idea. Yeah, well, I guess what tournament? The A something or other C, right? Is there a C in there too?
Atlantic Coastal Conference. Yeah, that. So the ACC tournament is at Barclays. It started yesterday, I believe, or today. I think it started today. And the Big East starts tomorrow with St. John's playing either Georgetown or Georgia Tech. Now I'm drawing a blank. Well,
as is tradition, the ACC, I mean, the Big East, of course, will be at the Garden, as it is every single year.
Yeah, that is not the surprise. But tacking on the ACC and throwing it in Brooklyn, I mean, that's a lot of college basketball in New York. Now, look, I mean, you know, there's really no local ACC team. I mean, I guess it's Syracuse, right? If you need a team that's
right, isn't Syracuse in the Big East? Because they're a Big East powerhouse.
They are now. So
right. They reshuffled the entire every single college basketball team on the planet, and they just decided to throw them in different. My mistake. How silly of me. But Louisville.
Wait. I can't even tell if you were actually correcting me or you were jokingly correcting me. And Syracuse is, in fact, the ACC.
The joke I was going to make was, well, but if we want to go see teams like, Syracuse, a traditional Big East powerhouse, right? And teams like Miami, another Big East team, right? And Boston College, well, actually, was Boston College ever Big East? I can't remember. But no, I was just mocking the fact that the ACC plucked like three teams. And Louisville.
Okay. I am not going crazy. Yes, anyway. Syracuse is actually in the ACC.
Yes, they are.
I think they're the only
Syracuse
New York team.
Here, didn't they?
Well, they're the eighth seed out of they're the eighth seed out of 15 teams. So they're in the middle of the pack. Of the ACC, only New York team in the ACC. So you have BC, you have Pittsburgh, and of course your UNCs and Dukes. But that's the only I don't ever remember the ACC tournament being in in downstate New York. But here you are, Barclays, and there's a ton of college basketball, and I think it's just going to set up for maybe slightly more involvement for the New York area in the college basketball tournament than you normally see. Although the reality is when tournament time comes, March Madness, I think your typical sports fan is filling out a bracket anyway, but.
Yeah. So it's just another example of how the Islanders are priority number, 16 at the Barclays Center after the Nets and college basketball and, Disney on Ice and the swap meet and, Taylor Swift and all those phenomenal acts and shows that everybody would much rather see than the Islanders. So maybe that's why the Islanders will eventually pick up and leave.
Yeah, right. So so basically, what this is getting at though is, come this time next week, we are going to be the play-in game. I suspect, I haven't checked the schedule, but if my memory serves correctly, they have the play-in games on the Tuesday. Of March Madness week, and the craziness begins on Thursday next week. So we're going to have all of our
always.
Yeah. So the conference tournaments will wrap up on Saturday and Sunday, more or less, and we'll have the brackets announced Sunday night, and then away we go with picking a perfect bracket.
Yeah, as is always the goal for everybody that does it, and like the one in gazillion chance you have of actually doing it. You know, there's so many different things that you have a much better chance of, like getting struck by lightning, winning the lottery.
Yeah, I like how Warren Buffett makes headlines when he offers a.
Oh yeah, right. Does he offer like $1 billion
like
for
a billion dollars to somebody that?
Yeah, I think. Sorry, we lost you for a second there, Mr. Epp.
No, I was just saying, they acknowledge that it's possible that it's even doable. I mean, please.
Yeah, well, the fact that he's willing to offer $1 billion. What was it? I forget. This has been going on for
something
a few years
stupid.
Now. I
mean, something stupid. Well, I think to all of his employees, he's off the Sweet 16 fully correct. Now that's more doable, but still, good luck. When you look at the public pools for Yahoo and ESPN and the other and CBS, when you look at the top entries, even at that stage, I don't think you ever see somebody with a perfect Sweet 16 at that point. So,
those odds are even extreme. So you have to get. So up to the Sweet 16, the first two rounds, correct? Or through the Sweet 16 up until the Elite Eight?
I don't know if they said explicitly if every pick has to be correct through the Sweet 16 or you just get the Sweet 16 teams correct. I mean,
Even that's still the odds are stacked. I would say,
of course.
Well, forget about just, you know, having a perfect bracket, which is just, you know, forget. But I think even that, I think you have a better chance of seeing the Islanders go undefeated in the playoffs to and winning a Stanley Cup and not losing a game than you have of that. Even still, I mean, it's just so unpredictable. And look, that's the fun of it. I mean, if you're in it just for the bracket and you're hoping to win your bracket, I mean, you might as well. I was gonna ask you this, how you do it. You might as well just throw a dart. I mean, instead of actually putting thought into it, you have probably a better chance of doing that than actually trying to, you know, break down the matchups and go, well, this team's playing really well. This team matches up well. This team plays good defense. So,
no, I mean, better... look, it depends. It depends on the field is of opponents. So if it's a small group of people, then, you know, you're more inclined to just go with the steadier bracket. But if you're going up against, you know, let's say 100 plus people, you have to pick against the grain. So depending on where you're going, on what your pool of opposition is. But when talking about against the grain, what I like to do, and this is just an initial thought without even knowing, it's really going to be based on what happens over the next four or five days. See, the teams that are going to go on a run right now, picks. Because they're in the spotlight, they're playing well, people are seeing them do well, so it's easy for somebody to pencil in to go deep in the tournament, right? I mean, that's just a natural reaction. But what about a team that has a good season resume, pretty good, but they end up just choking in an early round game in their conference tournament and they get knocked out? It leaves a bad taste in people's mouths and they're scared to have that team go deep. So that's a kind of team that if they think they're talented and they just had a bad game – and an early exit in their conference tournament, they might be a team that not a lot of people are picking in the big dance, because they're leaving more doubt. So it depends on, you know. And then there might be teams that you just watch here or there that you think they have a chance to put it together and make a run, even though they might not be a popular pick. Or you can just throw darts. And at the end of the day, the dart thrower probably will end up better off than. But it's fun to try to construct something that is against the grain, where, you know, if enough of them click, you know, you're behind those teams going in, so there's more excitement as you're watching the games as opposed to just randomly choosing.
Yeah, it depends on what you're going for. I mean, if you're looking to root for underdogs, I mean, you're going to be picking. Look, I mean, the rule of thumb is every single season, and I can't. I mean, I don't remember the last time that you had like a 5-12 where at least 1-12 didn't win. I mean, last year we saw Michigan State. Everybody was picking Michigan State. Nobody likes picking the number one seed. Everybody looks for that number two or number three that they can jump on. And Michigan State last year was a number two seed. A lot of people thought they should have been number one, but they were number two. So everybody jumped on them. Trendy pick to go all the way, win the whole thing. And what happens? They get knocked out in the first round.
I mean, that was incredible. An incredible game.
I don't remember who it was. Who was it again?
I don't either. I don't remember. I don't remember.
I remember Hampton as a 15 knocking off the Marcus Fizer-led Iowa State team in 2000, like one or two or something. I forgot. Was something like that. But that one just stuck out in my head because it was like
unless you're in a bracket that rewards picking a crazy upset that like that, like if you get points based on the differential of the seeds, unless you're in that kind of bracket, which is get 13 points if you pick the fifth, they exist. If you would get 13 points if you pick a 15 over a 2, because the difference in the seeds is 13. So you'd actually get 13 points for picking it correctly.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think I've ever, I know I've never been in something like that before. That's interesting.
I have done that. But if it's just a standard, you know, 1 point for the first round, two for the second round, four for – there's really no – it's really stupid to pick an upset like that in the first.
Not 15.
There's no
– You'll hear some people give you 14s, this team's a live dog, or, you know, this 13 no, but, surprise.
Right, but it's getting – it's figuring out, like, you know, getting – I mean, look, at the end, you need to get a couple of Final Four teams. You need to get them right. If the pool is bigger than four people, right. You know, you just, that's what it comes down to. So as much as you might want to pick the 12s over the fives and get excited about that, that's nothing in comparison to the points you get towards the end. So you'll have to pencil in some pretty high seeded teams unless you really want to take a chance on somebody a little lower. But the teams that are a little lower, like a team that might get knocked out early, might get knocked down a seed or two. And that's the type of team that, if they have the right makeup, can still make a deep run and not and be a lower percentage pick compared to other teams. Anyway,
well, but it's last year with Villanova. Villanova was always a team that choked. They've been perennially good under Jay Wright. You know, they've always, you know, been a relatively high seed team, you know, varying, you know, in the last like 10 years since he's been there in the NCAA. But you know, they've never won. I'm trying to even think of how many Final Fours they've been to before last year. And everybody always picked against them. And what happened last year?
Trends are made to be broken. I mean, it was a reversal of trends for two teams. You pointed out Michigan State. They've been consistently running deep in these tournaments.
Everybody
is underdog sometimes.
Tom Izzo. I got to root.
Right, I understand. But last year, those two trends, those two trends came to an end. And I don't even know
how Michigan State got started where everybody was picking them to win. It was incredible. How many people's brackets were destroyed on the first day? I think that was the first day, right? It was Thursday. No, maybe Friday.
It may have been Friday, but still. It's still the first round.
That's unbelievable. The first round, your bracket's destroyed because your national champion is out.
Well, that's why we all watch. That's why it's so much fun. And it is. You know, it's the perfect transition into baseball because it pretty much occupies Thursday through Sunday for two straight weeks, beginning next Thursday, and then you're pretty much at the start of baseball season. So to me, it really.
What about the NFL draft? The NFL draft coming up too.
God, please. And the weather just starts to get warmer. And I know I joke it with you about, you know, mentioning the weather at the beginning of every episode in our show, but it's a combination of those things. It's like, you know, that it, I don't know. It's the St. Patrick's Day, you know, that's a week from Friday. So, it's a rebound from the lull in sports that we're experiencing, and we typically do after the NFL season concludes. In any event, so
the Islanders are playing the Connor McDavid's tonight. What lull? I see no lull.
Yeah, I'm sure that everyone knows exactly who you're talking about.
Blown out by Golden State on Sunday. Oh yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah, they hung on. Oh yeah, oh, gosh, that was exciting.
Very, very exciting stuff. All right. Well, how will you be? So I'll just ask you, how will you be picking your brackets this year? Are you going to be doing research and listening to the experts? And I think this team is going to go on a run and this team looks really good and this team is hot. Or are you going to pick the team based on how hipster their mascot is? Oh, yes. Look at the Aggies.
I think I explained earlier how my approach is.
I might just go blindfolded and go, all right, 16 seed, the first year to upset a team, the upset number one.
Look, the first few rounds, you got to be fairly conservative. I don't know. But again, it depends on the field of play. So
I don't even know what my fields of play are going to be this year.
It's always fun.
And a field of play.
It just makes it exciting.
Well, this week it's about the mid-majors and their conference tournaments because, I mean, the big conferences, who cares? I mean, most of the teams are in anyway. I mean, maybe you have a lower-ranked team that has no chance of getting in unless they win the conference tournament, which, I'll watch. But
it's, I think the teams have earlier exits are going to be less popular picks for teams to go deep. So that's where I might try to pounce, but we'll have to see who those that may not end up happening. Really, there might not be that many teams that fit that criteria.
Well, didn't UConn win their conference tournament? When UConn won a couple of years ago, didn't they
And they were so popular, and then they had an early exit. It goes that way too. That's the thing.
Well, the year that they won, though, didn't they sweep? Like they won their conference tournament, and then
when they were an eight seed? The year they were, it was the 8-9 championship.
Were they an 8 seed when they won? Because I know Villanova. I'd have to go back and look. I forget. Maybe I'm not thinking of the right. I just couldn't remember like if they had like an amazing run that started in their conference tournament, or I know they were not a high seed that year because I still thought it was Villanova, the 85 Villanova team, that was the lowest ranked. Lowest seeded team to win the national championship when they beat Georgetown.
They were seven. Connecticut was 7 and Kentucky was 8.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
in the 13-14 season.
And that's right, because Kentucky knocked off Michigan that year. That's right.
They did.
Yeah.
No. Michigan's going to make it, but they're not that good. They're not that good, Michigan.
No, so they're not going to be a trendy pick then. Oh, potential sleeper.
I don't think so. No. I mean, they just don't have enough good inside play. They're a good shooting team, but I just don't. If they face any team that could defend the outside, they're not.
Yes, but they have that Stauskas guy and that Hardaway guy, right? And that LeVert guy, right?
Where is Stauskas even in the NBA anymore? I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Is he 76ers, Stauskas? I don't know. He's still there, though. He's still
in the NBA.
The guy with the weird name. The guy is one of our listeners calls. Guy with the weird name.
Oh, it looks like he's on the 76ers now.
He is. Okay. I knew he was still there somewhere. All right.
Well, good for him. Well, I know that talking basketball, I know that there's a thread that you want to get to about coaches. So have at it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't want to spend too much time on this. So, and the only reason I'm bringing it up is because it was a New York sports story. So we are a New York sports podcast. So I never actually explicitly talked about Mike Francesa in any kind of, you know, any kind of extensive manner. I mean, we kind of casually reference him and et cetera. So I have been listening to him for a long time. I don't really listen too often anymore just because it's tough during the day at work, whatever. I mean, sometimes you'll pick up some YouTube clips that they put up there. So he apparently stirred a controversy by stating that he didn't think that women were going to be coaching in professional sports anytime soon, if ever. And stirred off this big brouhaha, this giant controversy that kind of, I mean, it was mentioned in New York newspapers. It was mentioned in the Wall Street Journal. Jason Gay, a sports columnist for the Journal, made him offered to make him a wager. I'll bet you $1,000 there'll be an NBA woman coach in 5 years. Maxim, even in Maxim, the ironic thing about Maxim is that they're very much a magazine that kind of objectifies women. So taking, offense to Francesa's comments is hypocritical, if you ask me, but whatever. Anyway, so point is, it just garnered a lot of backlash and just anger and outrage over his comments. And I'll just say this, and where Francesa was definitely sexist, and he was defending himself today, like, I was just being reasonable, and I'm just telling you like the way it is, and I just don't think this is ever going to happen, blah blah blah. So I think he was being a little sexist when he said that women can't handle like men, like, a woman is not going to be able to manage like a group of men in the clubhouse or the locker room or whatever. But the one thing I was thinking about was particularly for the NBA, because I do agree with him in that the NFL, NHL or baseball, I just don't see a path for them to get there. Because obviously, I mean, you kind of think about the linear progression that you see a lot in all three of those sports. You know, you start off like in the minors, or you start off as an assistant. You gain some experience. Now you're seeing a lot younger coaches now in all three of those sports. I mean, we're back, 20, 30, 40, however many years ago. Usually, it was you paid your dues. With at least a handful of years as an assistant or in the minors or whatever, and then you got your
Kyle Shanahan's now the head coach of the 49ers.
Yes. And I mean, isn't
under 40?
Isn't the Tampa Bay head coach like 30 something, like early 30s? And you have a GM in hockey that's younger than us. He's like 27 or 28 or something like that. But the NBA though is interesting because there's no formula for becoming a coach in the NBA. I mean, you see guys that are plucked, you see former NBA players that are plucked off the court and thrown into a head coaching position where they have zero coaching experience in their entire lives. Guys like Jason Kidd, you saw Derek Fisher crashed and burned, sort of kind of Tyronn Lue, a few other guys.
Luke Walton
was an assistant for like a couple of years or something. But I mean, yeah, he retired young. I mean, what is he, like 35? I mean, he's not old. I mean, he retired young because he stunk. He's an NBA player, is able to get on a coaching staff, and now he's the head coach. You're right. So, yeah, but I was like, just like thinking, like, I think there really is a legitimate shot for a woman in the NBA because you have a couple assistants in the NBA. You have one, Becky Hammon in San Antonio, and then you have one in Sacramento, too. And, I don't know if the day that a woman gets a opportunity to interview for a head coaching job, is it simply just to you know, gain the headlines, or, you know, just to see what she's like in an interview room. You know, well, you know, is she really capable of being a head coach? I don't know what the circumstances are going to be for when a woman is given the opportunity, and then when a woman is, if ever, eventually hired. But it was just interesting because it got so much attention. It was written about everywhere. And well, this columnist for the Daily News had this in her column. Amara Grotsky said, when it comes to coaching, you either have it or you don't. But for Mike Francesa, it's a penis. That's what she wrote. So I had to reiterate that out there. So it was funny. But anyway.
Well, I think women in the NBA for coaching also make sense compared to the other leagues, not just because there's not quite the linear progression you see in the other sports, but because the NBA has the WNBA.
Yeah.
And so none of the other professional sports have that.
Right.
And so there's so many women. There's a lot more women playing the sport at a, you know, quasi-professional or actual professional level compared to the other three sports. So that's – when I say quasi, I'm not talking about the WNBA. I'm talking about college basketball. So you just have more women in the sport at the higher levels. So that's a large part of the reason.
And Becky Hammon also was the head coach for the summer league team for the Spurs and won a championship in the summer league. So I heard that story, saw the headline or something, you know, when it happened. But so Francesa was going, oh no, you're never going to see it in an NBA, or, you know, forget about the other ones.
And I think for a woman coach to have success. First of all, it's, you know, the first one's going to get so much attention in the media. It's going to, you know, because it's breaking barriers, if you will.
Yeah.
But someone that has already commanded so much respect within the league that there's no doubt on the players' minds that the person is a born leader, right? There can't be question marks surrounding the hire. It's got to be someone that's been in the league a long time. And that it's just a, you know, putting the precedent aside that it's the first female, you know, NBA coach. Removing that, there'll be no doubt in the players' minds of this person's ability to lead. That is what hopefully is how it initially goes, because that will set the precedent for the future, which, you know, I think would be a good thing. So,
yeah, no, all right. Yeah, I don't disagree. And especially in the NBA, though, where NBA teams, they're not, at least you look back however many years, I mean, what wins in the NBA? It's the superstar players. That's who wins in the NBA. You know, I don't know, like, how much you're going to attribute to, like, how much you're going to attribute the Cavaliers' win last year to Tyronn Lue. You know, nothing against him, but I mean, this is a guy that was just thrown the job after they decided to get rid of Blatt. And I mean, are you going to sit there? Well, I mean, look how much the team improved under Tyronn. Come on, they have LeBron James and Kyrie Irving. I mean, they won because they were the best team. You know, they beat the second best team. I mean, that's who gets to the finals, and that's who wins. The teams that have the best collection of superstars. So. I don't know what NBA teams are looking for. You know, you have a very interesting cross section of guys that are coaching in the NBA, whether it's former college guys or former NBA players that had no coaching experience, or guys that had a couple of years as an assistant. So you see a very wide cross section in the NBA. But you know, again, I don't know what they are looking for, if a NBA team is going to potentially give an opportunity to a woman to at least interview for the job within the next 5-10 years. I would say probably yes. Whether they get hired remains to be seen. But I think in the next 5-10 years, I think a Becky Hammon could absolutely get an interview for an NBA job.
This will be the last comment on this topic. What will be first, a Hip in the Lip episode 500 or Becky Hammon or another woman getting the first interview for
that's interesting. NBA head coaching job. 500. Well, at this rate.
Well,
because you figure, you know, if we average like 50 episodes, let's say within a year. So, 500, 10 years.
9 years.
So, first interview or first hire?
I don't know.
You say first interview hire.
Let's make it first hire. That's probably a more realistic
About first time before 500 episodes for H&L.
Yeah, we'll first see.
NBA. All right. H&L, well, Francesca's head explode. Ah, oh, I can't believe they're doing this. Ah. All right.
A couple of remarks about the NFL. It is free agency upon us, yes. And lots of moves typically do get made. I read an article this week that gave me, let's call it restrained excitement, if that's even, could even be perceived not as an oxymoron.
So not irrational exuberance.
The prospect of Tyrod Taylor being an option for the New York Jets. Yes, my favorite quarterback of all time, Ty God. the formerly of the Baltimore Ravens. Paired to all the quarterback free agents, I think he's better than every one of them. So. He's not technically a free agent right now. The thing is, the Bills were super close to, completely moving on from him at the end of last year. I didn't really understand why, other than dollars. I think we talked about that. Yeah. It was like an injury bonus or something. But, I think they're idiots if they get rid of him. I don't understand why they think they would be a better team with using somebody like – I don't see how the Bills think they're move forward to the team with somebody else. But that's like, if he becomes a free agent, they would release him. Is it
March 11th? So the thing is that he would be owed $30 million over the next 2 years. If he's on the team after March 11th, then he's guaranteed that money over the next 2 years. So
That's not a crazy price tag. I don't think that's a crazy price tag.
He's a legitimate. I think he's a good quarterback. Is he a great quarterback? No, but is he a capable quarterback that can lead the team down, to take the team down the field, and put up some points? Yeah, because he can throw the ball
His accuracy can come and go at times. He can overthrow guys or underthrow. He has a really strong arm. He can throw it deep. There's no question. He's just not a pinpoint. He doesn't have pinpoint accuracy. He just doesn't. But he makes up for that with his ability to scramble and extend plays. That's better than any option I think that the Jets can otherwise consider putting under center. So
I mean, Christian Hackenberg. Again, you'd be better than Christian Hackenberg.
No, I mean, I'm talking about other free agents, other signings that the Jets, like, Cutler or Glennon.
Can play. How high his ceiling is, I don't know. I think Glennon can play, though. Cutler, if you're the Jets, stay away. Don't even consider Cutler as an option. Just stay away.
I think, look, the Jets create a lot of salary cap room. If Tyrod Taylor becomes a free agent, I think it'd be foolish
not to go after him.
Not go after him, but be aggressive.
I don't mean like kick the tires and go, hello, are you available? Yes. You want to talk to us? Maybe sort of. Yeah, no, I agree. Go after him.
Because if the Jets don't get him and they end up with somebody else and they play, crappy and Tyrod Taylor, wherever he ends
somebody
up,
somebody else will be,
they play really well. I think McCagnan loses his job over that. I think he would. So,
I mean, there's nobody else. That's the thing. There's nobody else. I mean, you're going to go out and get some other, garbage dumpster guy. I mean, I don't know, again, other than Glennon, and I haven't looked at the free agent list for quarterbacks, but we know it's nothing really good. And I mean, come on, you're going to tell me that you're going to hope that somebody falls to you at number six? Like, you're not going to get the North Carolina quarterback. Maybe Watson falls to them, but I mean, you really want to. They have so many holes. You'd be better if they can bring in Taylor, who's still relatively young, and if he can blossom even more, improve his game, and you're able to fill some other holes. I mean, you may have something there.
Tyrod Taylor,
he's going to be a free agent, so let's hold off. See what happens.
The Bills were here and your receiving core. Remember, Sammy Watkins was out almost the entire season last year.
Yep.
He was throwing to Robert Woods, Justin Hunter.
Justin Hunter.
I can't even think of another receiver. Charles Clay. I mean, yes, LeSean McCoy was there, and, you know, LeSean McCoy does what he does, but Tyrod Taylor had nobody to throw to. Nobody. And even though the Jets got rid of
– The Jets don't have anybody either.
Well, Brandon Marshall's gone. Jalen Marshall suspended the first four games, announced today. Not that he was penciled in as – you know, they have Richie Anderson, Decker. I don't know if he's going to still be on the roster.
Who knows if he'll
yeah, I mean, Quincy who the heck knows what the Jets receiving? Yeah, but you know what? Quincy Enunwa was better than anybody the Bills had last year.
Yeah, well, when he started getting more reps after you know, Decker got hurt, he wasn't as
He wasn't, but still, I don't know. Tyrod Taylor can make can move the offense. Well, but look, we're
confident,
completely
capable NFL quarterback. If he's out there, the
we're
Jets
talking
be foolish not to go after him. It would be dereliction of duty.
I would be pissed off if he becomes available and the Jets don't get him. I think I'd be the maddest at the franchise by far than I ever have been before. Seriously,
really.
Like ever? Yes, I think so. I don't think it'll be close. Maybe that's saying that I'm over excited about Tyrod Taylor and how much I think he provides a spark. But I've watched enough of Tyrod Taylor to know, you know. Anyway,
than Rick Meyer was the backup quarterback to Vinny in '99. You had to watch Rick Meyer. Throw the ball to the other team, you know, with regularity.
Yeah,
I mean, we can, you know, go down the list of reasons to be angry.
I'm talking about, like, the decision that the franchise makes to pass on this guy would just, you know, it's that kind of decision.
Well, if you have a team that's going to go out and sign him to a ridiculous contract, just to an irresponsible contract, the Jets.
Well, like $20 million a year or something? Look, if a team signs with $20 million a year, okay.
But if he could be had for a reasonable contract and the Jets let him go, then I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you because there's really nothing – and you can't look at this while, you know, they'll tank. You know, we talked about last week. They'll tank for the USC quarterback if he decides to come out next year.
No.
That is
– No.
That is
there's no
stupidest,
way. No.
Dumbest approach that any team could have in any sport, in any level, in any situation.
No, that's not happening.
So
no.
– And there's nobody else. There's nobody else. Glennon, that's it for the free agents.
I don't understand. The Bills would be foolish. What are the Bills thinking? Why would they let the Bills
money,
might have a better roster than the Jets. But the Bills may have a better roster than the Jets.
I don't know. I have no idea what their
what's the Bills' backup plan? What's their backup plan?
DJ Manuel.
Seriously? That makes no sense. They might have more talent in their roster than the Jets do.
The guarantee.
I don't know. They might.
Is the guarantee money that big of a deal for them? I mean, 2 years, is that's such a big deal? It's not like he's 40 years old and you're
Maybe it's being played up as a bigger topic than it really is.
And maybe he doesn't get left. Oh, and this is all moot.
EJ Manuel is just so bad.
He is
terrible.
No,
it's just makes no sense. I don't know.
Maybe he's on the Bills come March 12th, and this is all, you know.
Yeah, well, we'll see next week. All right.
Tampering, as they call it in the NFL, has started. So the announcements could be made on March 9th, but the negotiations have begun.
Is there anything you want to say about the Giants briefly?
Not really. I mean, we know what they need. They need a left tackle in the worst way. And, I mean, you keep hearing Andre Whitworth, the 73-year-old left tackle for the Bengals. Oh, I'm sorry, not 73. 35. I'm sorry, 35. tackle for the Bengals, who's had a very good career, but he's 35, so we'll see. You know, that Russell Okung guy, the former Seattle left tackle, who was, I guess, released by Denver after 1 year. They flirted with him last year. You've heard his name thrown out there. They'll probably get one of those guys, you would think, unless they're just going to go for so much money, which the Giants don't have nearly as much as they did last year. They need a tight end. We know that. Also, Jack Doyle, the amazing Jack Doyle of the Indianapolis Colts name, has been thrown out there.
It's okay. No, he'd be better than anything the Giants had.
He absolutely would be. Okay. I don't know how good he really is, but he's definitely better than anything that they have. I've even heard Anthony Fasano's name, which I don't know. He's old already.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
I mean, he's old. I don't know. Right? No, you know, maybe he's like a backup.
I'd rather have Will Tye than Anthony. Yeah,
Will Tye.
Yeah, he can block. Will Tye is better than Anthony Fasano at this point.
Yeah, you've heard Terrell Pryor's name thrown out there for the Giants, which I don't think that's happening. He'll get a ridiculous contract from somebody. Let him go somewhere else. The one guy
is he a free agent?
He is a free agent. Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. The one guy I really wish they would bring back that it looks like he's going to leave is Hankins on the interior lineman, who I thought was very underrated. I think back to Linval Joseph. The Giants let him go a few years ago. He went to Minnesota, and I mean, they really didn't replace him until Hankins was healthy. And they, you know, after his first couple of years when he was always hurt, and then they brought in, of course, Snacks Harrison this year. But if he goes for 20, they're going to let him go. But that's a shame because he was a very, very good player with Harrison. I mean, really the best. I think the best interior line in the NFL last year. I don't even think it's debatable. I think that they were together that good. So we'll see how it works itself out. No big splashes, though, for the Giants. Don't expect any big splashes like last year. It's not going to happen. JPP, will there be a long-term deal? I think that they want to give him, like, a limited long-term deal. They don't want to, you know, give him, like, a 7-year deal for, you know, $80 million. I don't think they want to do that. So we'll see how that plays itself out. But it'll be a big cap hit if they're giving him 16 or 17 mil, whatever it is, since the franchise tag is on him. So we'll see how it works itself out, and we'll – I guess comment on it once all the announcements are made. Yeah.
Yes, we'll get there. So I think this is a good time to introduce a little bit of play by play. Andrew Ladd, 18 goals. He scores, and the Islanders are up 3-1 on the Edmonton Oilers.
Score. How about that? Score. Yes.
Well, look, you know the New York Islanders as it currently stands, the Leafs are 1 point ahead of them in the standings.
Oh, the Leafs won tonight?
Oh, though? The Leafs won. So technically, with the game in hand, the Islanders are a point out. So if they win tonight, the Islanders will go back into the eighth spot. I mean, look, the bottom line is with the way that the divisions are already, you know, with the way the Metropolitan Division already being where it is, the only chance the Islanders have is the eighth spot in the playoffs. And so they're probably, they would, if they make the playoffs, they would probably play the Capitals. The Blue Jackets are only 5 points behind the Capitals, but in any event, yeah. So, I mean, so they still have to play pretty well. They have to outplay the Leafs, and they have to outplay Tampa Bay, and they have to outplay the Flyers. They're only a point behind, even though the Islanders have a game in hand. So there's a handful of teams in the mix now. There's been some separation. Some teams have fallen back. Can make a surge, but you got Toronto, Tampa Bay, Florida, and Philadelphia.
Florida lost to the Rangers, so I guess.
All those teams are in the mix for the eighth spot.
Yep.
Of the playoffs. So it's pretty much come down to that, you know, with about 15 games to go. And even if they make it, and they might, they're playing better. They just have these clunker games here and there. Just, you know, with the Blue Jackets, they got blown out, and Calgary on Sunday, just a terrible game. It was like a no-show.
Yeah, first period. I mean, you know, they and Greiss kept them in that game, and you know, we all thought that, you know, Berube should be playing this game, or you know, they have back to back in Dallas and Chicago, and Berube doesn't play either one of those games, and they come back, have to play an afternoon game in Calgary on Sunday, and still no Berube, and that just goes to show you Gart Snow, and this is why the man has to go. I don't know at this point what it is, if it's solely that Gart Snow is harboring a grudge against Halak, and because he's a petulant child, Garth, and because you know, his feelings were hurt, and his you know, he was offended and insulted by Halak's, like, you know, mild just criticism of the situation with the three goalies that, oh, gotta banish him, gotta banish him, you know, you're never coming back, you know, that's it, you insult the guy, you insult Garth, the great Garth, you're out, you're done, finished, goodbye. Whereas Doug Weight clearly has zero confidence in J.F. Berube to do the job. And I don't blame him. Berube's been terrible when he's been in there. I mean, he did that mop-up duty, only let up one goal on Sunday against Calgary. I guess, whoop-de-doo. But it's clear that Doug Weight has zero confidence. And I'm sure he said, hey, Garth, what the hell? Just, he's making $4.5 million to rot in the minors. What the hell? and I don't know what the response is.
Tested. I mean,
crickets.
What? I mean, you can't just swap Berube and Halak right now. Is it not that simple?
I don't think he has to go through. The thing was waivers. We don't want to expose him to waivers. I think because the expanded roster now, they don't have to do that anymore. So
who cares? Exposing to waivers.
Right. Who cares? Even if he had to be exposed, who cares? He stinks. You were wrong, Garth. You were wrong. I mean, like usual, you're usually wrong. So you just were wrong again. It's unbelievable to me, and I don't know, he's not used to this workload too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's really out there every night, pretty much. Yeah. So look, just a couple of notes of positivity, at least from an outcome perspective. You know, they hang on against Dallas, winning, you know, in Dallas 5-4. Then they have to go back to back the second and in Chicago. And, you know, you're just thinking set up for a disaster, right?
Yeah, and they
team
play hard.
Was winning 1-0.
Couldn't do
it. They did. They did.
And they had
but they hung tough. And they did. Look, I mean, Chicago kept coming with chance after chance.
Third
and you're
period,
like, it's only a matter of time.
Them. All over them in the third.
And you're like, it's only a matter. Look, the Islanders just got, I think they just got tired. I mean, it's a back-to-back, you know, away games. And maybe these guys are professional athletes and you're not supposed to have that as an excuse, but you can see.
Tavares did actually. You never hear Tavares with excuse. He said in Calgary, yeah, we're a little tired from the road trip. I mean, you never hear him make excuses. And he flat out said, we're tired. Which you don't want to hear anyway.
Look, and so the you don't want to hear it, but look, the Islanders, they were up 1-0 against Chicago up until the last minute or so. And yeah, they scored, and you're like, all right, fine. Well, it was a matter of time for Chicago to score. You know, it was the empty net. It was a 6-on-5. And of course, they lost the shootout. And
I mean, Greiss definitely didn't react. He didn't see it. So he didn't react.
He didn't really have a chance.
No,
he didn't have a chance.
No.
So
no.
then Sunday, just you think, all right, well, they'll come out and be competitive. But man, just a complete no show. And
no. First period,
Calgary scoring
nothing.
Three goals. Well, they scored. Calgary scored three. I must have turned the game off for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
it was nothing. Yeah, it was nothing with like 7 minutes left in the first. I shut it off, and 5 minutes later, I turn it on. The first period's still going, and it's 3-0. Like, Jesus.
And they scored 4 in the first. It was at the end of the first period. I mean,
that was just
a couple bad bounce. I mean, a couple bad bounces, but I mean, they had nothing. They just had absolutely nothing in that game. And yeah, I mean, it was just you move on.
I mean,
but you can't have those games though. When you're again, we talked.
No, you can't.
Up a hole, you can't be having those games. Are
teams like the Capitals and the Blue Jackets and et cetera, do they have games like this ever? I mean, do they get blown out at all at any point? Like, you know,
seven,
I think that's what different.
One and 7-0, and then
and then
5-2, which could have been
Toronto.
8-2, I mean,
yeah, the Toronto game and the Blue Jackets games, just brutal. And, like, dude, yeah. but those teams. The top teams in the league, they don't have clunkers like that, right?
No.
I mean,
because
their talent level is so much better, and they're, so, while the Islanders can be competitive against good teams, there are just days where you're just like, what the hell?
Yeah, and you've seen some shuffling with their defense. Hamonic's back, and he's looked a little shaky. And, of course, Ryan Pulak, who still continues to rot, also continues to rot in the minor leagues for whatever stupid, just ridiculous. Well, I have no idea. Him is a complete mystery. Pulak's a complete mystery to me. I have no idea what the hell he's doing down there. I mean, the guy should be here right now, and that I just don't understand why he has not been called up. He's a weapon. I don't give a damn what you think about his he's decent enough in his own zone. The guy is going to learn here. He's not going to learn in the minor leagues already. He's been there long enough.
No.
Get him up here.
All right.
He's got 100 mile-hour sprint.
How about the guy that is up here now, Ho-Sung? I just keep seeing reference to him being asked about number 66, and there's a big deal about
God.
It.
Stupid story.
Why?
Holy.
Who cares? Well, I have no idea why this is even relevant. Why is it even?
The Penguins fans are upset. It hurt their feelings that he dared wear the number of the great Mario Lemieux. How dare you?
Wait, so there's no other player in the NHL that wears number 66?
at this current moment, I guess.
Or has any player in the NHL worn number 66 since Lemieux retired?
I would.
Is it been that sacred?
Not many, but you know. But think about how many. It's also an weird. It's one of those like weird numbers. Think about like, you know, number four. How many players in this league were? And you heard them talk about this. Number four is Bobby Orr's number. Maybe that nobody should touch that number, even though it's not retired everywhere like Gretzky's. And yeah, like I don't understand. Like, who gives a damn? He said he's honoring Lemieux by wearing it. I don't. It's not. It's not disrespect, which that word we'll get to in a few minutes, but. It's just absurd. It's ridiculous. It's a non-issue. It's a non-story. Well, I don't know if we just mock it. We love to mock the Penguin fans, the bandwagon Penguin fans. You guys want to cry over it? Go ahead. We'll laugh at you. That's what we'll do.
You know, look, if I didn't dig into it. I just saw tweets about him being asked about 66. But I know that that's Lemieux's number, obviously, but I wouldn't have guessed. Look, if you had to make me make an educated guess why it was an issue, I guess that's the only reason I could have come up with.
Well, I was going to say 2/3 of the way to the number of Donald Trump, 666.
it's the only reason I could have come up with, but it was just, it would have seemed such a ridiculous reason for that to be why he was asked that I that's why I'm asking. Like, I can't believe that's the reason why.
There's nothing else. It's one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. I mean, you laugh at it. You just laugh at it. That's all I do. That's all Islander fans are doing.
Look, there's only so many numbers you could choose, and I don't know. Come on. I mean,
geez. You know, the bandwagon Penguin fans, you know, go away. Whatever. Just go away. Go back to you. You know. Go back to wherever the hell you go.
They'll go back to beating us pretty much, which is okay.
That's fine. Well, in 2013, they needed a phantom call against Brian Strait taking down Sidney Crosby to beat us in game three. And maybe if we win that game, the Islanders beat the Penguins in that series. Oof. So who knows? Who knows? But
sour taste in lips, mouth.
Yes. And you know what? We beat you in '93. Remember that, Penguins fans? We beat you. You're uber talented Pittsburgh Penguins. You're 15 or 17 games in a row, however many games in a row you won. And, you know, Lemieux and Jágr and Joey Mullen and Ron Francis and all and Kevin Stevens and our underdog Islanders, without their best player, knocked you off in game 7 to stop you from a three-peat. Oh, yeah, that's right. One of the great upsets in NHL history and sports history. One of the great upsets. Anyway. Hosang, though, I tell you, I am very impressed with him so far. Very impressed. First goal tonight. Congratulations, Mr. Hosang.
Yes, that's right.
So goal number one, hopefully first of many, as Butchie said. And I will say, I am impressed. He has looked very good. The speed of the game is – he's – acclimated to that very quickly. It seems like he's comfortable out there. He's comfortable skating with the puck in traffic. You've seen him a few times skate with the puck, you know, in that traffic. You've seen him, you know, make snap decisions, quick decisions, which is good. He's, you know, the one thing I'll say is I think he's very, very conscious and cognizant of being responsible and making sure that he makes the safe play of which is good. You want him, you know, to understand the situation, make the safe play. But there are times when if there's a chance that you feel you can make a play and maybe take a risk a turnover, whatever, that's fine. Go for it. And I think Waite will emphasize that to him because you've heard him say, like, he's not here to be responsible and play, you know, penalty kill. He's here to score goals and to play his style of play. And I think as he gets more comfortable, you will start to see that from him. So I got to say, so, and he's not going anywhere. I mean, he's here to stay for the rest of the year. I've been impressed. Let's see if he can produce now. That's the question. You know, he had like a goal from like 30 feet, right. Whatever. You know, like a slap shot that kind of found it. The puck had eyes, as Butchie would say, down its way to the or as well as former coach Jack Capuano plus Butchie would say too, found its way to the back of the net. And let's see if he can continue to produce.
Okay. The Islanders are.
But if he's going to play with whoever he plays with, make sure if it's Ladd and Nelson, make sure that you go to the open area of the ice. If he has the puck on his stick in the offensive zone, find a seam, find a hole. Because if you do, it seems like he's going to get the puck to you. Yeah, that's what he's looking to do. He's looking to make plays.
Find the hole.
Find the hole. Get that seam. Find it. Seam routes. down the middle, wherever it is. Get yourself there. He'll get the puck on your stick and make sure that you shoot the puck when it comes. Don't go. Oh my God, what do I do now? Because Ladd did that on the, it was a play maybe in his first game where he got the puck to Ladd in a pretty decent. You know, he created something out of nothing, and Ladd has the puck on his stick, and it's like, oh my God, I get the puck's on my stick. What do I do? So,
Philip, I know that you identified a hipster moment of Zenith for this week.
Indeed. So that takes us to the hipster moment of Zenith. Well, did you watch the Knicks Warriors game on Sunday on ABC?
I watched
National Game of the Week.
I watched about half of it.
All right. Did you watch the beginning, the first half, or did you watch the second half?
No, I watched more of the second half, not the first half.
Oh. So I don't know if you, because they were talking, and I didn't realize. I had no idea that they were going to do this. So apparently, now, I watch Knick games. I don't watch that many other non-Knick NBA games. Occasionally, you get like a big matchup, whatever. So, but one thing I've noticed, and I haven't railed against this, even though this would be like the prototypical thing that the Lip will rail against, is NBA arenas playing music while the ball is live, while it's in play, which to me is obscene. I mean, I think that is the most absurd, ridiculous concept that's ever been concocted by a professional sports league. Is that most of the teams now, I don't know if all of them, and I didn't realize that the Knicks were playing music while the ball is live. I know they do the Oregon defense, even though that's not existent. You know, there's right. No reason to do the Oregon because we know that there's no defense being played. But they've been doing that forever. That I can live with. That it's been going on since I've been watching, since the early 90s, however long it's been going on. So that's fine. But teams that play music, I just don't understand what the – why? It just takes away from the game. You're here for a game. You're not here for music. If I want music, I'll go to a concert or listen to, you know, my hipster WFUV or whatever. I'm waiting to watch a basketball game. So the MSG finally comes up with a good idea. And I don't know how this was conceived, whatever, but they decide that they're not going to play any music. There's not going to be any sound effects or contests or it. The first half was going to be basketball only. Oh my God, what an idea.
So not even a defense, no organ, nothing.
Nothing at all. So it was complete and total silence. You're watching and listening to the sounds of the game. And you heard, you know, you heard Van Gundy and Jackson with Breen talking about this. And I didn't realize initially that they were doing this, that they announced it, whatever. So, and they're talking about how much they love it. They're like, this is great. This is wonderful. Which I agreed. I was like, this is awesome. This is great.
And well, that's what they were used to. I mean, Van Gundy, that's what he was used to.
Because there was the organ, fine, but no music. It's about the game, not about all the, you know, ancillary nonsense and crap that you're going to, you know, throw in with the game itself. So after the game, Draymond Green decides that he's going to have some words about the experience of playing without music. I guess, you know, when he was playing, you know, they always made sure to have, you know, loud music on when he was playing, you know, when he was, say, 10, whatever years old in the playgrounds. I guess there was always, you know, music blasting, and he only feels comfortable with that. I don't know. So his comments were, and I'll read a couple of them verbatim. He said, that was pathetic. Pathetic, the word he used. It was ridiculous. It changed the flow of the game. It changed everything. You get so used to playing the game a certain way. To me, I think it was disrespectful to everyone from NBA executive Mike Levine and Warriors president Rick Welt and all these guys who have done these things to change the game and give the game a And then he utters complete disrespect again. And then he says, you enhance things in the world to make it better. You don't go back to what was bad. It's like computers can do anything. I'm not even gonna, you know, who cares? The words and the phrases that you talk about, some of the most inane, idiotic, just absurd comments that anybody, I mean, we've heard plenty of, you know, choice, ridiculous, idiotic comments come from our president. But I tell you, reading these afterwards, I mean, is this guy certifiably insane? Where is he coming from with this? Because they're not.
Maybe we should have him on
his. While you're,
we should. He has a podcast too. Maybe he should come on as a guest and tell us about his podcast.
I think I would insult him. I think, and he would say I'm disrespecting him. You're disrespecting me right now. complete disrespect. Like, I was floored, blown away by the complete idiocy that he displayed with his
look. I don't know. I don't know his background. I don't know his background. Like, it's easy to judge based on the words, but
I don't think there's. I don't think it matters. Why does it's nothing? Circumstances, where his upbringing, none of it matters. You're using these phrases and words to describe something like this, something that should be done everywhere. Don't you want people to come to a game to watch the game and not go, oh, where's my music? They're playing basketball. They're playing some kind of ball down there. There shouldn't be an orange.
Well, I mean, you know, look.
Sphere into
look,
that
I mean,
you know, hoop there. To that receptacle. Look, where's my music?
I don't know. He said, I guess, but I'd want to ask him. Why is it bad? Why was it bad to not have the sound?
Islanders,
4-1 ago.
Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, why? You know, maybe he has some weird explanation for why he considers it bad, but no, who knows? But yeah, I mean, me, look,
idiocy, yeah. Just inane, ridiculous.
Hipster moment of zenith, yes.
I guess, well, this was my moment of, well, the zenith part was the no music, and then seeing his comments was the hipster moment of Nadir. I don't get it. But yeah. Hey, and you heard, like, you know, and again, you heard the announcers talking about how much they liked it, and then you even heard Jeff Van Gundy then, which I thought was kind of funny. He talked about how, because I think it was Green, actually, who went into the stands, went into the front row, and knocked over somebody with the cup. And then I guess it was Van Gundy says that if you're sitting in the front row, you should have a sippy cup. Only sippy cups for those sitting in the front row. No, no other open containers or anything.
He comes up with these statements like in real time that are just like they're just so out there. They're kind of funny.
Yeah, Van Gundy's good for a lark every now and again. I will say I don't watch
him. Exactly.
And then Mark Jackson just goes, that's kind of funny, Jeff.
Pretty much. I mean, because of all the times, there's so many spillages that create such, you know, ridiculous disruptions every five minutes.
It's funny, Breen notices it. He's like, oh, I guess there must have been a spill or something. Yeah, I guess they're mopping up over there.
Yeah.
Another delay. Well, I mean, now the delays are, besides that, delays to see if there's a flagrant foul. Actually, in a Knick game yesterday against Orlando, they had like a – seemed like a 20-minute delay because they had to confirm if there was a flagrant foul, and then, oh, it was a flagrant. I mean, it's ridiculous. A technical foul, and they thought it was just a personal and a technical. And I mean, come on with these. And every sport now, it seems like, every sport has its own version of the elongated, just excruciating review. Every sport, seriously. NHL, baseball, football,
they do,
and basketball. They all do.
They do. That's just the reality now.
Nature of the beast. Oh, well, next. All right.
Shakes.
Moving
shakes,
on, shall we?
Shake.
Yes, yes. And, of course, that will bring us to our final segment of episode 50 of H&L. That's right. Everybody's favorite, yours and mine, the hipster beer of the week, and that will be your cue. Take it away. Yeah,
50 is not a milestone, or it's just a number.
Milestone.
So this kind of beer is getting ridiculous hype right now. If you can have it, try it, get it. And there's all, a collaboration 30 between...
Of those that enjoy the H beers.
Yeah, exactly. There's a collaboration between the following two breweries, Tired Hands and... how I'm feeling right now after talking to the Lip for an hour. Tired Hands and Omnipollo, OMNIPOLLO. Of course, we always post links to the actual beer on our website if you actually want to see what we're talking about. So Tired Hands, which is in Pennsylvania, which is just north of Philadelphia. Omnipollo, which is in Stockholm, Sweden, have had a collaboration going on for several months called a milkshake.
Wait, you say Stockholm, like Sweden?
Stockholm, Sweden.
Oh, wow.
And so they've had this milkshake collaboration going on for several months. And three weekends ago, they had and they're released at the Tired Hands Brewery. That's the only place you could get them. It's like the Fermenta or something.
I see.
You have to wait in line, and they let you buy 3-4 packs at most of the milkshake, and you're waiting in line for like 4 hours, something ridiculous. And it is like the most, it's the most heavily sought beer, I think, on the East Coast right now, on these milkshakes. It's that hot. And so the most recent one was Sundays ago. It was called Extra Vanilla. So it's described as their newest over-the-top culinary IPA brewed with a heavy amount of oats and lactose sugar, hopped intense with Mosaic and Citra, which are hops, blah, and then conditioned to top almost twice the amount of luscious Madagascar vanilla beans. This batch is straight up vanilla ice cream sundae IPA. It would make our sweet pals at Omnipolo proud.
Mm.
Yeah, I gave it a 4.75. The vanilla on the nose was there, as it was in the mouth.
And this is beer. I mean, they're calling this vanilla ice cream sundae beer. I mean, so do you like taste?
Yeah, I mean, look.
Like, do you know you're drinking a beer? I mean, Or is it like a milkshake?
Yes.
All right.
No, you are drinking a beer. There's just this vanilla, infusion basically. But yes, it is drinking a beer. It's not like don't think creamy. Some people might describe it that way, but it's not like creamy like you would think a milkshake is. That being said, like they've made the other varieties that I was able to find. Like I've had guava. I did have their guava milkshake once. They've had coconut, pineapple, strawberry as well. There's probably some others that I'm just not mentioning, and there's going to be more in the future. And so it's just one of those that I don't even know if they distribute it on tap anywhere. I'm not sure. I think it may be strictly you got to get it at the brewery, and of course they're going to sell out that day. People like the hype for these milkshake beers is just getting kind of ridiculously absurd.
Well, let me ask you, do they have like the Friendly's chocolate chip cookie dough, Reese's peanut butter cup, hot fudge, peanut butter topping with sprinkles of whipped cream sundae beer? Do they have that?
I think there's a cookie dough beer, and I've heard it's terrible.
Well, actually, yes, I can vouch
not,
for that.
Not Tired Hands.
Our listeners can vouch for that too. But.
Yeah, it wasn't Tired Hands.
No, it was Fat Tire. Fat Tire.
So there was a brewery that released a beer called Hornswoggler.
I see.
Now I need to look it up to remember who made it. The Vale Brewing Company, which I've not had any of their beer of yet. They are in Richmond, Virginia, and they've issued a stout that is, I think, meant to be infused with Oreos.
Ooh.
And that is very highly rated on Untappd. Just to give you a perspective, this particular milkshake, the Extra Vanilla Milkshake, picked up a 4.0 currently with...
Wait, what is it? 4.0 what?
1,700, over 1,400 ratings. That is a really highly rated beer.
And would you say it's 4.0 what?
4.3.
4.3. I see.
The Hornswoggler is actually 4.36. That's pretty high. I don't know if you can get it.
Not very impressive. Yeah. I don't know.
That is look, on Untappd, anything basically anything at 4 or higher, I think is considered, pretty highly rated. If it hits the 4. Right. Is it because it's higher than 3.9? I mean, what's the difference between 3.9 and 4.0? Not much, but that's the arbitrary cutoff. It's a convenient cutoff.
Yes, right. The even round number, and so just like 50 is for us.
Speaking of round cutoffs, all right, bye. next week we'll have our tournament brackets in front of us to talk about our analysis of who we like, who we don't like. We didn't even touch upon baseball for a second today, but that's okay. I feel like there was a lull. There was a lull in the spring training news, in New York at least. I mean, there's some things going on here and there around baseball, but can't get to David Dahl's outfield contributions in Colorado this year or anything like that. Dahl. At this point,
should I know who that is? We're doing fantasy. Do I have to know who that guy is?
Or if Michael Franco's gonna take a big step up this year, or Miguel Sano's gonna continue his high exit velocity year. He's gonna improve on that. Improve on that strikeout rate. Okay.
And Drew Smyly in Seattle. That's right. We're gonna be following him closely.
He had a 4.88 ERA last year. Look it up. Definitely accurate. Will moving to Safeco Field help his home run tendencies? Maybe only slightly, since he's an extreme fly ball pitcher anyway. let's call it one. And so we'll have plenty of basketball to talk about. We'll see if Tyrod Taylor's a New York Jet come a week from now.
Yes, the Islanders be in the eighth spot a week from now.
The Islanders are back in the eighth spot in the play, and in a technical sense, they control their own destiny. If they went out, they're in the playoffs.
That's right. Yeah, is there a better chance of that happening, or a better chance of getting all the teams right for the first two rounds in the NCAA bracket? Oh, stay tuned.
All right. Thank you always for listening. Yes. Follow us on Twitter.
In the books, significance all around for that round.
And on that note, let's close out with our theme song. So that's how we're going to shut down. We're going to start shut down with the theme song. I just decided. So all right. Thank you.
Thank you. Follow us, listen, the whole thing. Yes. All right. Bye.